Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 200 of Nerd Pride Radio. 200. In the year 200, Emperor Septimus Severus was expanding and consolidating the Roman Empire. This was about 20 years after the last of the good five good emperors, and it was the absolute height of Roman expansion. This was the largest it ever got. It was all downhill after that. The year 200 also marked the end of the Paracas culture in South America and the beginning of the classical age of Mayan culture. In the Mideast, it was the year that Rabbi Judah the Prince redacted the Mishnah and established Talmudic law. So put together the Talmud for the first time. In Japan, Himiko consolidated her power over a number of clans, becoming the Shaman Queen of Wa, also known as Ancient Japan. And man, I was fascinated by this because, you know, almost 2,000 years ago and we had a Shaman Queen in Japan. This was interesting and I looked it up and she's really kind of half mythical, half like the Chinese list her in their histories, but the Japanese histories don't. And there might have been political reasons for that, but I couldn't find enough solid fact, but I'm fascinated. I'll keep reading about her. Anyway, also in the year 200, the population of the entire world, about 250 million people. So, not as much as today, right? Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome, thank you, Lisa. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder and now Starfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week, my own massive ego. 200 episodes. Seriously. I mean, I'm not doing anything special for 200. We're just going to do some fingertips later. But seriously, 200 episodes, that's a lot. That's like 6.5 years I've been doing Nerd Pride Radio. And for the last three, I've actually been doing it, you know, every week-ish or so. So that's pretty darn good. Before we start off in the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, let's do some updates. For the next Awesome in the 80s episode, where Aiden and I are going to review a movie that I thought was awesome in the 80s, and maybe it does or doesn't hold up. We are watching American Werewolf in London. That'll be probably in a week or two that we'll do that episode. So if you're interested in following along or if you want to submit your own commentary on it, you can certainly watch it for free on Netflix if you have Netflix, or Amazon Prime. So American Werewolf in London. I kept thinking, God, didn't I announce a movie already for this? So if I did already announce a different movie, yeah, we're not doing that one. We're doing American Werewolf in London. So keep up, people. All right. Now it is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever has been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. The very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Straight in, like I say, it's just going to be a fingertips episode.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
That's right, fingertips. This is where I just read through my master list and I just go point by point. I haven't bothered to research any of these or spell them out into larger segments, or some of them I've just kind of forgotten why I wrote them down. So this way I can cover them and the obsessive part of me can cross them off my list. So first up, Starfinder. Wow, dudes, I have been, and ladies, I have been going through this book. The kids have been going through this book. So excited to play Starfinder. Everybody's excited to play Starfinder. So I am going to be starting my kids in the Dead Sons book one, which is the first adventure path from Paizo for Starfinder. And all of us are super excited. We just sat down and created characters with everybody this weekend. And my Dead Sons book one, apparently, when I ordered it and they said they had five left in stock, they lied, or five other people ordered it before I did in that 30 seconds, because now it's on back order and they say they'll have it to me in 2 weeks. So before we get to that one, I'll make up something. We'll play something off the cuff and just kind of play around with the combat system, the ship combat stuff, you know, just kind of get a feel for it. So I'm excited. So we're going to be playing some Starfinder coming up. And my friend Dave has talked about possibly putting together a one-off game of Starfinder on Roll20 for our regular gaming group. My friend Kaz, who you guys, well, you met Dave and Kaz on the Gen Con episode a couple weeks ago. My friend Kaz is looking at putting together something. I think he wants to have a group of Starfinder characters to go out stopping space whalers, which, oh, that sounds awesome already. And if you can't get enough Starfinder, like I can't get enough Starfinder, let me recommend the podcast Cosmic Crit. I talked about Starfinder last week on the show, and raved about it. And the people over at Cosmic Crit, their podcast, it's an actual play podcast of the first book, Dead Sons. So, you know, spoiler warning, if you're planning on being a player in the Dead Sons adventure arc, don't listen to Cosmic Crit. But I have listened through, I'm actually in their third episode, which is their first actual play episode. The first two were intro and, hey, let's meet the players, meet the characters. And it was all really cool stuff. And now I'm into the first episode. I'm halfway through it. And these guys are good. I'm not one for actual play podcasts most of the time, but I'm enjoying this. I really, you know, they reached out to me and said, hey, if you're into Starfinder, try it. And so I am, and I'm really liking it. And more than anything, the idea of listening to this one is it's helping me see how other people are applying the rules and playing things out. And I'm really excited about that. And they're doing the same thing I am. They're starting with Dead Sons, and they're sticking to the core rules as written. So already there's all sorts of people who are putting out all sorts of homebrewed stuff and supplemental stuff, and you can even find actual publishers, because, you know, Starfinder, like Pathfinder, it's an open game thing. So if anyone who wants to publish supplemental material for it can certainly do so. And so lots of people have been doing that, but I'm like, you know, before I get digging too deep into other people's supplemental material, seriously, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait and see how it turns out, you know, once we get the actual real source books. You know, they've got their Alien book coming out soon. They'll be doing Starship expansions. They'll be doing explanations of the Pact system, and then Outer Worlds. And then, you know, all this stuff is coming. It's Paizo. It's what they do. It's how they suck all my money from me. And I just sign it over happily. So yeah, give Cosmic Crit a listen. Like I say, man, the first couple episodes I tuned in, and I should have written down all their names, but the guy introducing it and doing most of the hosting work, I'm listening to him going, oh wow, this guy already has a podcast somewhere, because he's got that radio voice. He knows what he's doing. And so I went over to their website and I listened further, and I don't think that he does have another podcast. He just sounds that way. It sounds really polished. It's really good. So anyway, enough about Starfinder. Okay. Next up on my fingertips list, on my master list here, self-initiated helping. This is I was just talking with my kids about it this week, because we went out and we put in a frisbee golf course at our local state park, and it was really awesome. It was a scout project, so all the Boy Scouts from our town went out and we put in a frisbee golf course, which was really cool, and we're really excited to actually go play on it ourselves. But while we were doing it, my kids have the same problem I do, in that, you know, if I'm standing there, you know, hey, give me a job. I will ask people, what can I do? What can I do to help? How am I going to get involved in this? As opposed to other people who just see a project and they just know. They just jump in and start grabbing things. And I always feel like I'm a little inadequate when it comes to that, because, you know, here's all these people getting involved, and I'm like, I have to keep asking, you know, hey, where can I fit in? What can I do that's going to, so, you know, sometimes there are some projects that, you know, if it's computer related, if it's a project at work, if it's this kind of stuff, oh, well, you know, that's my field. I know what I'm doing. When it comes to, you know, helping somebody working on my car or, like this one, you know, with all the digging and bolting and all this other stuff, I hate that about myself. I wish I was better at that, and I just suck at it. And my kids have the same kind of issue, which, God, I wish you guys could see me. I should have a webcam on this, because this is my dad's joke was always that my grandfather, his dad, was like that, that his method of helping, he stands around and he doesn't know what to do, and he waits until you get started with something, and then suddenly his hands are just there in your way. He's like grabbing the same stuff you are, as if that's going to somehow help. Like, oh, that's what we're working on. All right, let me get on in there. And, you know, if you could see my miming of this, it's really funny that way, but, you know, otherwise you guys just have to put up with poor radio, I suppose. But there, I've crossed off self-initiated helping. It's something I'm working on. I'm getting there. All right. Next on my list, Kumail Nanjiani is my spirit animal. I know I've talked about Kumail before, and I know I've talked about how much I like Kumail before. I wrote this one down while listening to an episode of Doug Loves Movies, and Kumail was on. And it's just one of those things that this happened when he was on Dan Harmon's podcast all the time. Something happened on Doug's show, and it wound up happening about two times during the show, that something happens and I'm like, no, that's wrong. Or why didn't you do it this way? Or I wish I could remember the exact, this is what happens. I put things on the list. It takes me too long to get to them. I can't remember all the details, but I'm like yelling at the radio because they've got either something is wrong or somebody needs to fill in this piece of information or someone needs to ask this question because it really, that doesn't make any sense. And Kumail always asks the question I'm thinking. It's like every time I start yelling, then all of a sudden Kumail, he waits like 20 seconds. He picks up my psychic vibrations in the past because they're all pre-recorded. But Kumail's like that. And then he winds up asking the question I was going to ask or making the point I was trying to make. And, oh, it's so nice listening to anything with Kumail on it because he's got my back. Oh, so nice. And I feel kind of bad because I didn't make a trek anywhere to go see The Big Sick, and I really should. But now Big Sick isn't playing anywhere, and it's not yet out on streaming or video or anything like that. But Kumail has his mostly autobiographical movie, The Big Sick, which has gotten all sorts of rave reviews and accolades, and I'm really excited for him. And him and his wife, Emily, they put this thing together, talking about their life, how they met, the troubles she went through with her illness, and it's supposed to be awesome, and I just haven't gotten to it yet, so I can't wait for that to come out, because again, Kumail, my spirit animal, I'm going to have to watch that movie as soon as it's available. But speaking of watching stuff, the next thing on my list, there is too much TV again. It must be because it's the fall season, this must be when they overload me with everything, but I mean, I've got Glow, which has been out for, 3 weeks now? I don't remember how long it's been. And I am 3 episodes into Glow. I have to get that finished because I'm really enjoying that one. But also, I'm 1 episode into The Defenders because I forgot The Defenders came out. I had so much other stuff that I was doing. I completely forgot about it. And so I've got to watch The Defenders. I'm 1 episode in. I can't even comment on it except that I'm just so excited to see these characters all together and doing stuff. The Tick. Finally, we have more than a pilot episode. The new live-action Tick has the series on Amazon, and I haven't watched that yet at all. I am a season and a half back on Game of Thrones, and I have the first 2 discs of the last season where I left off. I have those sitting in my mailbox, and I still have not gotten to... Yeah, that's right. I still get discs from Netflix. Don't judge me. Still haven't gotten to watching those. Sense8, God, we must have gotten 3 episodes into Sense8, and it's like, I don't know, I'm just not as excited about it this time around, but I may finish that one out just to be completist about it, but I don't know. Steven Universe, I'm a whole season behind. There's too much TV, really. I need to call in sick for about 2 weeks and just get these all taken care of. That would be probably the most responsible thing to do, right? And then that way it would be off my plate. I should do that. All right, next on my list, Cat Deeley. All right, I watch See You Think You Can Dance. I love See You Think You Can Dance. I think it's a great show. It's the only reality show I actually pay attention to, and I just really enjoy it year after year. And, oh, wait, my wife is going to point out another reality show I watch, I bet. Okay, what? Oh, my wife says I'm talking too fast. I should slow down. Ah, all right. But now I'm self-conscious about it. Darn it. Okay. But I was talking really fast. All right. So anyway, so you think you can dance? I can't do it. I can't. Is this too fast? Is this? I can't tell anymore. Now I feel like I'm just artificially slowing myself down, and I'm. Oh man, no, don't apologize. This makes great radio. All right. Anyway, Kat Dealey, I saw a bit. It was an interview with her. It was a something. Anyway, she talks about how when Kat Dealey is the host of See You Think You Can Dance, she does all the MC work on stage, and she said in this interview that when people meet her in real life, they meet her and get to know her. She says one of the first comments she always gets is, "Wow, you're exactly like you are on TV. How weird!" And I appreciated that. She says, "Yeah, you know, I amp it up a little bit. You know, when I'm on the cameras, you know, when I'm under the spotlights, yeah, I turn it up a little bit and you know, play the role." She said, "But yeah, essentially, that's who I am. I don't change anything." And I appreciated that. And I hope that's what I'm like. That people who get to meet me, yeah, I amp it up a little bit, when I'm on the podcast, but, I hope I'm pretty much the same person. I think I am, but you know, what do I know? I mean, I still, you know, I put on my radio voice a little bit and I play it up a little bit, especially for the pre-written stuff. But hopefully this is me, you know, try and be honest, try and be true. And, all right. See, my wife is over there confirming. Yeah, no. This is who you are. No, trust me. I put up with it every day. Ah, she's so lucky, isn't she? So she's confirming that, yes, she is. So just so you guys know, my wife has vouched for me. We're all cool. Anyway, that was it on Kat Dealey. Next on my fingertips list here. All right, math and logic. Man, you know, if I had talked about this one the same week that I wrote it down, I would have had this awesome rant going on, but you know, I've talked about the math stuff that I watch on YouTube because I have several science channels and especially math channels and one just mathematics puzzle channel. And there's a lot of them that I watch on YouTube, especially. And I love math. I love it a lot. And it drives me crazy when you get one of these hypothetical math problems. So, you know, whether it's, you know, this is how rewards are handed out unless there's, you know, it's like a logic puzzle to play it out, or the horse race where every horse always runs at exactly the same speed, or the, you know, it's stuff like this. They're hypotheticals. All right. Most of our prisoner dilemmas where the warden comes in and offers you a very specific deal if you can identify this particular, you know, yeah, they're all unrealistic because they are hypothetical logic puzzles to test out mathematical concepts, especially stuff in game theory. And if you read the comments under these in any, I mean, I know it's YouTube comments. I get it. But the number of people who go, well, yeah, but nobody would actually do that. Or in real life, it wouldn't actually happen that way. Well, duh. Of course it wouldn't. And so this could have been a perfect nerd writ. Yeah. My wife is just smirking. What? Oh, she must just love me a lot. So. Okay. She explained. I will, I'll get to that one in just a minute. Let me finish my little rant here. Or what would have been a rant. God, it would have been a perfect nerd rage. I would have come in and I could have gone on and on about how annoying these people are. But, then it took me, you know, just setting it aside for like 3 weeks on the master list. And now I get back to it. And I'm like, oh yeah, but that's just the way YouTube comments are. There's always people that are going to try and throw a wrench into things or just don't get it or just don't care. Eh, whatever. It's no big deal. No, what Lisa was pointing out is we were just watching, The Return of the King last night, the last Lord of the Rings movie. And we're all having a great time. The whole family was there watching. Well, except Jacob. He's obviously away at school. He doesn't live with us anymore. But we were enjoying the Return of the King, and, you know, we love the whole series. And it gets right towards the end, and that's the moment when okay, this is a spoiler warning, but you've all seen it and you've all read the book. So anyway, right at the end, they escape from the mountain, and Frodo and Sam have climbed out on a rock as lava is now flowing out and flowing all around them. And they're just up on the pinnacle of this rock, trapped by the flowing lava. And this is the moment where Aiden decides to pipe in and go, yeah, There's no way they could survive that. Even if they're not in the lava, the heat would kill them right there. And we all just look because, okay, that's the moment where the logic breaks down in this movie for you. That was the moment where you finally went, well, this could never happen. All the rest, no, that was all fine. Even the they are finally saved by eagles. That's all okay with you. We all cheered the eagles, but they're too close to the lava. That was the part. And as my wife says, it's entirely possible that he was just joking because he was just playing it up because he enjoys that movie as much as the rest of us do. So, but cute. All right. Next up, boy, the next one is tribalism, and I really don't want to talk about this one. This is, I'm going to say just enough to cross it off of this list, but man, this is the idea that we have our fandoms and people, we break down into groups. Groups are useful. It's nice to have people that you identify with, that you feel a kinship to, that you guys will stand up for each other. And in this modern age, in a country as huge and diverse as the United States of America, or even in the global community, a lot of times, instead of breaking down along traditional, lines of borders, or religions or stuff like that, we break down into the stuff we like, whether it's jocks versus nerds or, people who love a particular fandom and somehow they want to be exclusive about it and other people, you like Star Trek, but you're not a real Trekkie. Hang out with a group of rednecks for a while and just start asking the difference between Ford and Chevy trucks. They can go on forever. And God forbid that you should have representatives of the two different camps in the same place at the same time, because they have very, very strong feelings about it. Even though I think they all recognize that it's really not that big a deal. And yet, oh man, they really get heated up about it.
I don't appreciate you talking about my family.
I am talking about your family to a degree. Yes. I absolutely am. To a lesser degree, Marvel versus DC or who knows what. And I get that we all have our things and it's great to identify with a group, but it also is just detrimental to take it to the point where that is your identity and that any criticism of whatever it is that you're into is somehow a criticism of you in particular. And this is where I didn't really want to talk about tribalism. I've had this on here for months and I've been wanting to kind of develop this out. But every time I do, it's just, I don't know. It's more uncomfortable than it is interesting because I think, we're seeing an awful lot of this with Trump supporters versus not Trump supporters. And it's become very political and it's become very, I don't want to keep going about it. So you know what? I'm done. Let's finish that one. The next one is, the next one ties right into tribalism. So I'm not even going to go on too much about this one either. The idea that there is an objective good in art. Well, maybe this is a little bit different. When I say objective good, what I'm trying to do for myself is I do this with movies a lot where I watch a movie and I enjoy that movie and I want to tell people I enjoy that movie, but I'm a little embarrassed because I know it's considered a bad movie or I know that it has some elements in it that are just considered, bad cinema. And yet I'll say, look, I know this is a bad movie and yet, man, I really like it. Well, you know what? If I really like it, if I enjoyed watching it and I would enjoy watching it with other people or I recommend it to other people, then it's not really a bad movie, is it? It doesn't meet the criteria of classic cinema, or it doesn't meet the criteria of the sort of stuff that gets awards, but that doesn't mean it's a bad movie either. And so, when it comes to pulp novels or B movies or, whatever, the idea that there's some sort of objective good, that there's a set of standards that marks what's good and what's not in this particular field, and that if you enjoy something that's outside of that objective good, somehow you have to apologize for it. I have a real problem with that. And again, I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. Again, recognizing and apologizing for the fact that, oh, some of the movies I like are outside of what's considered good, or TV shows, or books, or comics, or games, whatever it is. And so I'm going to try, and I'm probably not going to do very well at it, but I'm going to try to stop apologizing for any of that stuff. I think I may even have said something like this in the past, something similar, but maybe not exactly this. But man, I'm going to try, because if I enjoy it, if somebody enjoys it, well, then it's good. I mean, at least, you know, in their opinion. And as I tell my kids all the time, you don't judge what other people like. I mean, if they're enjoying it, then okay, that's what they enjoy. Who cares? If it's not to your taste, okay, it's not to your taste. You don't have to criticize it and convince them that they're wrong for liking something. No, that's true. That's true. Unless it's my son's ex-fiance, whose favorite superhero movie was Batman and Robin. And in that case, no, there's really no justification for that. I mean, you try, but clearly she just didn't get it. So, all right. Anyway, that's beside the point. Next thing on my list, the last thing on my list, and I'm not even really going to go into it too much. Time travel movies. You guys know I love time travel movies. And if you don't know that I love time travel movies, it's because you've not listened to more than a couple episodes of this show yet, because I talk about time travel movies a lot. And for some reason, they keep coming back to me. I know I've talked about them. I know I've talked about my favorites and made recommendations about them. And yet somehow I keep putting them back on my list as if I haven't said enough about them. So I think maybe next episode, or maybe we'll do the American Werewolf in London with Aiden next episode, and I'll do it after that. But coming up soon, I'm just going to do an episode of time travel movies and just give you what I like, what I don't like, give you my top 10, give you something. But man, I can't seem to get it out of my system yet here on the podcast. I keep wanting to talk about it. So I am going to do that, and that's coming up soon. And so I suppose, look, if you have an opinion about time travel movies, then now would be the time to send it to me to contribute to that episode, and I will certainly include your thoughts in them, because I love talking about time travel movies of all sorts. And anyway, not to dwell too long on it, because I'm going to do a whole episode about it. We'll get to that. Let me back up one, because to stuff that the objective good in movies and deciding, you know, whether something's a good movie or a bad movie. I don't know if it's considered a good movie or a bad movie, but Logan Lucky, man, I enjoyed the crap out of that thing. And I mean, I don't remember the Rotten Tomatoes score. I think generally critics are giving it positive-ish reviews, but some people were saying things about, oh yeah, well, it's a typical Steven Soderbergh movie. It's a some people were upset that maybe the redneck stereotypes in Logan Lucky were over the top, or who knows what. But I'm telling you, Logan Lucky was Steven Soderbergh coming out of retirement to do another heist film in the vein of the Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, etc. And it was one that is not written by him, but it is directed by him. And Logan Lucky is a group of rednecks who want to rob NASCAR. And this is a heist movie about robbing NASCAR. And I'm just going to tell you, I was so pleasantly surprised by this movie and had so much fun watching it. It is the difference between this and an Ocean's movie, for example, is an Ocean's movie is entirely about the heist, because I don't give a crap about any of the people in that movie. I just want to see them pull this off. That's all it is. And I enjoyed watching some of the Ocean's stuff, but Logan Lucky, it has all of that. The heist is there and the whole thing, you know, with your typical twists and troubles and reveals, and it had all that same stuff. And yet I also had enough intro that I actually gave a crap about these characters. I actually really liked them and I wanted to see them succeed. And there was enough humor thrown in and interesting things. And it was really fun. It's Channing Tatum stars as the titular Logan of Logan Lucky. Adam Driver, Kylo Ren, plays his brother and does an awesome performance. I really had a good time with Logan Lucky. So, I didn't have another movie to put with it to make it a science fiction double feature, so I'll just throw it in here. You guys should go see that, seriously. All right, that is the end of my fingertips, and that is the end of, oh man, you know, I tried during the They Might Be Giants concert, I tried to capture fingertips and get some new audio recording of them performing live and doing fingertips, but I wound up getting most of the song, and I wound up getting the ending fingertips where they do it all long and slow and creepy, and everyone's told me that they don't like that version. I didn't get the first fingertips, so it didn't come out, and so therefore I don't have new sound. So anyway, but that's beside the point. We're done with this one, and that means it's time to move on to the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2, that was him, in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me have wrong about something? Send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdpryradio.com/nerds, and I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And thank you to Kaz, who sent me a good 20 or so new Pod-O-Matics this week, and they're really awesome, and I really appreciate it. And now that means, let me take a look at the top of the list here. Yeah, Kyle still dominates with like 30% of the list, but Kaz is right there on his heels with 25%. So, which again still means that the two of them together own over half of the stuff on here. So seriously, guys, get in there and teach these guys a lesson. Show them that there's other fans out there who love listening to the Pod-O-Matic. Or not. Or, you know, if you know what? That was too much pressure. That was too much. I just, you know what? If you feel like it, send me a couple. Send me 10. Whatever. All right, you know what? Not a big deal. I've got almost 200 of them, so we're in good shape right now. All right, but the first number is number 76, and 76 comes from. Hold on, I have a problem. Sorry, spreadsheet issue, but I got it sorted out. Number 76 is from Kyle, and Kyle says, "We are living in the golden age of television, right? I mean, I went on Amazon and found an original series of theirs from 2 years ago that I never heard about, Mad Dogs, which is basically a 10-episode series about a bunch of 40-somethings with a dead hooker in the bathtub, even though there's no hooker and no bathtub. That's the vibe. It's amazing, and I've never heard anything about it. Just sitting there. Golden age, right?" Yes, Kyle. We are absolutely living in a golden age of television because anybody can do anything, and there are so many opportunities out there. And so much good television, the stuff that's being put on Netflix right now, the stuff that's being put on Amazon and Hulu, where they are writing and producing entire series without the bother of always having to go through a pilot episode and then appeal to a mass audience and get the approval of studio executives and put up with all the rewrites and the notes and the other stuff. Look, again, listen to the Dead Pilots Society podcast. I know some of you already took me up on this. Go listen to Dead Pilots Society. It is a spectacular podcast where they take a pilot episode of a TV show it's a pilot that got bought and it was in production and they had a final script ready and it never got recorded. These are pilots that just never, it's not like they had a pilot and it failed. It's like they had the pilot written and then they never actually filmed it. And so now this is a whole bunch of really good actors, a lot of them that you'll recognize, who are sitting around a table and doing a cold read of an unpublished pilot. And some of them are not as great. Some of them are awesome. Some of them, I mean, the majority of them are really good. And there's a few in there that you're like, why didn't they make this a show? I would have watched the crap out of this thing. Why? Oh, man, the John Hodgman episode, and it's one of the early ones. It's like maybe the second or third one. The John Hodgman episode is one of my favorites. But one of the other things I love about this show is not only do you get the read of the pilot, which is usually really entertaining, but also before that is a half-hour interview with the writers to talk about why it didn't make it. And it's always a story of studio execs and bigwigs who just screwed things over. They noted it to death. They changed hands too many times. Someone got fired and the new guy just didn't even bother to look at it. Or it's always an interesting behind the scenes of Hollywood story that is really, really fascinating. And so the reason I bring all that up is to say, look, with all these new streaming channels that are making their own content, they get around a lot of that. Netflix is notorious for, you know, if they like your idea and they like what they're reading, they're willing to give you a free rein to just make your series, and they will virtually not comment at all because it's your vision, your project, you do whatever it is you're going to do, and then we'll put it out there. They give you money, they let you do your thing, and you make good TV. I am really amazed by it. Yes, there is so much good TV, which is why I am so far behind, because I've never even heard of Mad Dogs, but now I've got to add it to my list. I mean, holy cow. So, yes, we are in a golden age of television. There's so much, and yes, there's still a ton of crap. Absolutely. Even from Netflix, even from Hulu and Amazon and all these other, second string channels that don't have the same recognition, but they're trying to make their own content. And there's lots of hits and lots of misses. And as always, crap is always going to outweigh the good stuff, but it's so easy to find the good stuff nowadays. It's so nice. 37. 37 is from Mrs. Darks. All right. Sarah Beth says, what national holiday would you want to create? Look, me, tabletop role-playing day or tabletop board game day. I don't care. I mean, look, that's my selfish ones. Those are my, if I could get a day off of work where it's expected that you're going to go out and just play games all day, I'm good with all of that. Now, having said that, yeah, that is a little bit selfish. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have, like, someone on my website recently, I think it was Pete suggested, I can't remember, but somebody suggested that with Columbus Day coming up, boy, isn't it time that we did away with Columbus Day and maybe just replace it with Immigrants Day, and you can celebrate, you know, the first peoples that came over to colonize this continent, 10,000 years ago, but also celebrate all the diverse people that have come to the Americas to make it what it is. What a good idea. What a great idea. But, again, I'll still play games if you give me the option. 45. 45 is from Kaz. Hey, my buddy Kaz. Kaz says, you've been dropped into a firefight in the depths of Alpha Complex. As a yellow clearance R&D data collector, what mad science are you armed with, and how does it betray you? Okay. First off, I have my heat-seeking landmines. These are my favorite mines. I love these things. I've put them into virtually every game I've played, and nobody ever falls for it. Nobody ever deploys them. But they're anti-personnel mines or so. Yeah, I always put a different label on them. But the mines get deployed. Well, they would if someone would ever touch them. The mines get deployed. You create your barrier with it. You try and defend your area with it. And what you don't know is that all the mines have little tiny crab legs on the bottom of them. And so they will then, once they've been placed, they then sneak around and try and find the best place to surprise people from. It's their whole job to hide around corners or underfoot and try and get you to step on them so they can jump on them and go boo. And then, of course, blow you up and you die. I love those. I love those. That would be my favorite. And it's not even an original idea to me. I think it came straight out of like the Mark IV adventure, out of the original second edition Paranoia. And if I had a set of those, that's what I would be deploying. And that's obviously also how I would die several times during the game, is having my own minds come out and surprise me to tell me what a good job they did and then blow me up. But man, I love those things. I keep putting them out. Nobody ever does it. It's too bad, because it's a lot of fun. 62 is from, it's from Master. Sweet. I haven't heard from him in a while. Master says, who has the most Podomatic questions? Oh, yeah, well, it's already Kyle. It's Kyle and then Kaz and then, let's see, Master, you are, after this one, you only have one left. I think Master may have stopped listening. I don't know. He certainly isn't coming around as much anymore. So, yeah, Master, you are almost out of questions. But, yeah, it's Kyle, Kaz, then Ronster, then Zimney. Ooh, Mrs. Darks, you're number 5, followed by Produce Farmer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, down the list. So there you go. Number 20. And 20 is from, Okay. Did I number that one? Who cares? All right. Number 20 is from Mrs. Darks again. Oh, good. We have an expert on this one in the room. Mrs. Darks asks, what is your most annoying habit? Lisa, what's my most annoying habit? Okay, I just paused it because she had to go into her computer because apparently she keeps a file. There's a whole list of these. So, no, I'm kidding. She actually just rattled them off the top of her head, but she had a few. I'll give you the top two. Number one, and this was the first thing she mentioned, is, picking my toenails. She says, yeah, and a lot of times I'm not like, peeling them off or picking them off, but it'll have a rough edge on it. And so I'll just get my, while I'm sitting there watching TV and I've got my foot up, I'll just put my hand on it. I just kind of pick at it just a little bit. Just pick, 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 pick. And it makes enough of a noise that it really, really annoys her. She says it drives her crazy, which I believe her because she says something every time I do it. Okay, that's one. And then she says the second most annoying habit is that every weekend we come up here to her classroom so that she can work on her lesson plans. And I come up to help and, it takes a couple hours. And she says, every single weekend we come up here, I ask her if this is the weekend that we're going to have sex in her classroom. And, even though we've never actually had sex in her classroom, I always ask her. And she says, yeah, that's kind of annoying too, because there's no way that's happening in the school. Not a chance. I mean, there's windows that there's no corner of this room you could hide in that someone couldn't see you from a window if they walked by.
Because that's what's
But right. No, look, if we had privacy, I'm thinking if I bring up, something to kind of black out these windows, I bet that's what would finally convince her. I should try that for next week. I'm going to black out the windows and then we'll, she says no. No, not at all. And she says also now that the school is infested with bats, yeah, no, look, she's scared to do anything in this school because there's bats everywhere. I caught the one last week, but there's been bats since then. I was hoping there hadn't been any since then, and then I could claim that I've taken care of the problem, but I obviously haven't. 17. Because that's what happens. You throw the bat out, and then the others know not to come back in through whatever that opening is that they obviously found. So bats are smart like that, I'm sure. Okay. Oh, this one is from Billy Bob. And number 17, did I say that? Okay. It's from Billy Bob. And Billy Bob says, the top three characters that you've created for a role-playing game but never actually played. All right. Off the top of my head, Alibaro, who is – that's actually my Gmail address is alibaro@gmail. And – because I really liked this character. And he was a gnomish bard that I created, and I absolutely loved this guy. And then we wound up not having a game to play him in, and so I set him aside. But I loved Alibaro. Anyway, doesn't matter. The details are irrelevant. But Alibaro was one. Beth Yaga, which was, again, my username for years back on the Shadowrun forums, Dump Shock, and then also on the Bulldreck forums that stemmed out of those. Beth Yaga was the name I went by. Beth Yaga was a very mean old shaman woman in Shadowrun. And she was a slob, and she was mean and crude, and a consummate liar. She told all sorts of phenomenal stories about how she's actually 150 years old, and she would recount all sorts of things from history, talking about, growing up in the 60s, going to Woodstock, this kind of stuff. And, she was full of it. And I loved that character and never did have a chance to play her. I can't even remember why I created her. I don't think I created her for a specific game. I was just having fun. And, I never did get to play her. She would have been a lot of fun. And then my other one is, three. I would have to, Snowfoot. I was going to say my latest, Igaba is my latest Pathfinder character that I've created that I think is going to be for the next game we play. But I think I'm going to get to play her. And before that, I created Snowfoot, who is just, I don't think I'm actually going to use him, but he's a Pathfinder character. He is, an Asian-based, Japanese-based, type of character, the Tien. So he's from across the sea. And anyway, he he's got this whole long backstory, and the upshot of it is he's a half vampire, so he's a daywalker, much like Blade. But he is a daywalker who is also a healer, and the irony of his character is that because of his half-vampire nature, he can't heal himself. He can only channel positive power, and thus he can only heal living things, and he doesn't quite qualify as living, and so therefore he can't heal himself. And ultimately, as much as I love Snowfoot, he's just not very effective. And, you know, min-maxing being effective in a role-playing game is not necessarily something that I really care that much about, but enough that he's really limited. I mean, really limited in a lot of things. And so I kind of set him aside, and then when I came up with Ikaba, boy, I like her a lot better. So anyway, I'm still super fond of him, but I'm just not going to get to play him. 52. And 52 comes from Kyle. Hey, Kyle. Kyle says, "You have to stop seeing a primary color. It will now only look grayish-brown to you. Which primary color do you give up?" Ooh. All right, so my choices are red, yellow, and blue, assuming that that's the primary colors we're speaking of. In which case, what? Green just looks, if I give up blue, for example? Because I'm thinking, well, maybe I don't know. I don't know. So if I give up, let's say I give up yellow. So does that mean my oranges just look like, you know, reddish brown? My greens just look bluish brown? I mean, this grayish blobby, I mean, ugh. Boy, if I had to give one up, which one is going to affect me the least when I pull up to a stoplight? I'm going to say blue. No. Well, it doesn't matter. Blue or yellow. I won't give up red, but I'll give up blue or yellow. Let's say, oh man, so tough. All right, yellow. There, I'm done. I don't even know why I had to agonize over that so much, but I did. Wow, this one's 22. 22 comes from, it's Kyle again. And Kyle says, "Hey, did you hear they're making a Stranger in a Strange Land movie? That's dumb, right? Who are you casting in the role of misogynist Jesus?" I don't care. Oh, how dumb would a Stranger in a Strange Land movie be? I can't stand that. I cannot. I mean, all right, you know what? It's possible. It's possible if you want to retell this Jesus allegory in a modern setting with modern sensibilities and find some way to do away with all the horrible misogyny and stupid stuff that was in that book, I suppose you could. But then, you know, the thing is such a classic. It's such a, and in some quarters, a beloved classic that people would have a really tough time if you mucked around with it too much. But man, it really needs some mucking. That thing is terrible. It is, I'm sorry, look, Heinlein as a pulp sci-fi writer, I get it's engaging stuff. I've read most of his work. It was especially appealing when I was a kid. And then I grew up and I realized that, man, there's some really terrible stuff in there. A lot of that, I mean, it's just him living out his various power and sex fantasies through the characters of his books. And it's a little grotesque. I mean, more than a little grotesque. I mean, ugh. So, you know, Stranger in a Strange Land, Valentine is the is it Michael Valentine? I think it is the main character who was born and raised on Mars, even though he's human. He comes to Earth with all of his Martian learning and new philosophies, and he basically, he's like Jesus, and he enlightens people. And yet, oh, along the way, he also is surrounded by a trio of female assistants who are at his beck and call, and he even lays them out as, you know, one blonde, one brunette, one redhead, and he gets to have sex with all of them, and it's just Heinlein playing out really disgusting fantasies. And yes, Heinlein did have interesting commentary to make about religion in a lot of his works, and I'm sure there was interesting commentary about religion in this one, but I just can't get over it. Which does not answer Kyle's question of who do I cast to play Michael Valentine in this movie. And it's gotta be someone whose career I don't mind ruining. So I'm going to say Michael Cera. How's Michael Cera for your misogynist Jesus? That would work pretty well, I think. 57. 57 comes from... There it is. It's from Ronster. Speak of the devil. And Ronster says, what is the longest time you have been stuck in traffic? Oh, that's easy. It was, I don't know, 4 hours, 5 hours. I can't remember. It was a long time. When we were in Japan for the first time, or maybe it was when I came back to Japan on vacation while my family was living there. I can't remember. But my dad, as the base commander of Yokota Air Base at the time, was invited because he was a big mucky muck, and so he got to go to important functions. And so he was invited to go to some big ceremony festival thing that was going on, and he was going to go to a big dinner in the midst of this festival. Anyway, it was going to be a big deal. And so the whole family was invited to go along. So we all piled in the van, and we had a driver who was going to take us there. And we just got stuck in traffic. It was festival traffic in Tokyo, and we just got stuck. And we wound up finally, after enough hours had passed, finally my dad says, well, it is too late to show up now. That dinner is over. Let's go home. And so once the traffic cleared up, we headed home, and it was maybe a 25-minute drive to get home, 20-minute drive. After 4 hours, 5 hours of this stop-and-go, stuck-in-traffic crap, yeah, it's like 20, 25 minutes to get home. It was super easy. So that's the longest I've been stuck in traffic. Let's see. There was also the time in Chicago when we were stuck in traffic on the way into Chicago, when we went in with our whole family, and we were on our way into Chicago, and there was a concert letting out at the same time that we were pulling in on Lakeshore Drive, and we just got stuck, and there was just no getting through this thing. And we were there. How long were we stuck in traffic, Lisa? I don't even remember anymore. Yeah, it was like 45 minutes to an hour that we were stuck here, and long enough that Eli, who was very little at the time, Eli had to go. And, you know, we had been telling him, yeah, just hold it. We'll be at the hotel soon. Just hold it. We'll be at the hotel soon. And then we got stuck in traffic. And now, oh, crap. Well, now he can't hold it. So he had to pee in a bottle get himself through. So, yeah, that was kind of terrible. He was really miserable and angry about that. That was not fun for him. And he couldn't have been but, what, 3 or 4? I mean, he was little. So, but he was mad about it. That's right. And then we had to tell him the story about his Uncle Kyle peeing in a bottle while on the road. That's another story for another day. But that made him feel a little bit better about it. So number 70. 70 is from Eliahad. Eliahad says, lemon or lime? Lime. I they're both close. Very close for me. But I prefer lime better. So, like, if it's a lifesaver, lime. If it's a Skittle... Yeah, definitely lime. Oh, I love those. Better than the green apple. They actually have some classic bags of Skittles around now that have brought lime back. I don't know if it's a permanent thing or what, but I'm really excited to see it. I love lime. I miss lime. 39. 39 comes from... Let's see. Oh, there it is. It's from Kaz. Oh, Kaz. Oh, this is a great question, Kaz. It says, Biscoff spread. Evil or menace? Oh, Biscoff is awesome. Wow. All right. Have you ever had Biscoff cookies? Because they're great. Biscoff cookies, they're really good. And Biscoff spread is a spread about the consistency of peanut butter or Vegemite or any of these others, except it tastes like Biscoff. It's like sweet, and it's like a cookie in a spread, and it's really good. It's great to put on, you know, bagels or toast or something. I mean, it's a treat. It's not a... You know, this is not where you're getting your nutrition from. But Yancey, who loves Biscoff spread as well, he's the one that introduced me to it. He loves Biscoff, and he was at his local diner, and he was telling them about it. And so they ordered up a batch of Biscoff spread, and they wound up having it in their cafe. And she's like, yeah, you're right, this stuff is awesome. And she was, you know, so now when Yancey goes in, they've got Biscoff spread for him to put on stuff. But she says, now I've got this huge tub of it. What am I going to do with that? And he said, oh, Well, he said, you know your recipe for peanut butter pie? Instead of peanut butter, use Biscoff. And so she did, and then had Biscoff pie on the menu. And Yancey said it was some of the most awesome stuff ever. And this is his little town. It's like 45 minutes away. So I have never made it down there to try the Biscoff pie. But, man, doesn't that sound heavenly, Kaz? Seriously, does that not sound great? Oh, man. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. His question was evil or menace. No, neither. What, you don't like Biscoff? How can you not like Biscoff spread? This stuff is great. Oh, you're crazy, dude. Seriously. All right. Yeah, I intentionally misread that because I love Biscoff. 92 is from Mrs. Darks. And I think this will be the last one. Oh, this is an easy one. What is your favorite app currently on your phone? Well, look, my most useful app is probably the calendar. That's awesome. My most used app would be Chrome because I love getting to the internet all the time. But my favorite app is Space Team. I talked about Space Team a couple weeks ago at the Gen Con episode, and I love Space Team. It is great. We just, in fact, introduced my nephew to it when we were at dinner the other night, and I love Space Team. That thing is so fun. So anyway, I'm not going to ring it again. That is it. We are all done. So let me turn it over to GLaDOS, and she will give you a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Just Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, and Nerd Pride Radio itself. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use and write us a nice review. Give us 5 stars. That sort of stuff makes a difference. But if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. If you enjoy it, spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on my forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. If you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, but to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, I am recording. Anything that you write down, I will read off at the end of the cast, which is exactly what I am doing right now. So we're going to start off with my forums at nerdpyradio.com/nerds. And I said, 200 betray me. And my brother Kyle starts up with gas shortages. Every gas station in my town was dry for 48 hours, like 10 different gas stations. Supplies are still limited. Are these the end times? Yes, Kyle, these are the end times. You should take your family to a secure bunker with as many canned goods and bottled water as you can bring along, and then just wait out the end. That's all you can do. There's nothing left. Yeah, for those of you who aren't aware, my brother lives in Central Texas, where even though they didn't get hit hard by Hurricane Harvey, because all the gas comes in through that area, that's where the refineries are, that's where everything comes from, they stopped getting gas and all their gas stations ran dry for 48 hours. So, you suck, man. So, next up. Oh, it's from Phoebe. Phoebe says, given your initial examination of Starfinder, is there an optimal size of player group you think suits the game in terms of having all the most useful classes and abilities covered? Put another way, if we set aside the usual concerns about managing a number of human players, are there certain classes or special abilities that are essential to a well-rounded group of characters? That is an excellent question, because there is so much diversity in what you can play here that, I mean, to me, I still feel like, you know, when you're just talking about the number of actual human players at the table, I still feel like 4 or 5 is really about the most I like to play with, and, you know, 6 if I have to. And I think that still applies, but there are so many useful character classes in here that, you know, it would be nice to have, you know, 2 soldiers, have, you know, one who's really good at ranged combat, one who's really good at melee combat. Boy, you feel like you kind of have to have a mechanic. Nice to have somebody who can get in there and do that computer and engineering stuff. But we need a healer. So you've got to have a mystic who can do some healing. And then, there's just so much stuff in there. You got to have an operative. Someone's got to be able to do all your sneaky stuff. There's a lot in it. And, you know, if your characters don't want to play that particular group, you know, if they don't want to divide up into the typical fighter, cleric, wizard, thief, then, you know, are you going to come up short? And I asked this very question on the Starfinder subreddit, and the answer I got back was, yeah, it really doesn't matter. It's not that big a deal, because, like, the idea of you have to have a healer in your group, not really so much anymore. It would be nice to have someone who knows magic, just so, you know, if you've got magical effects that you need to sort out, you've got someone with that kind of knowledge. But you can have people pick up some magic with feats and actually have the ability to handle some of that with, you know, without being a full-on mystic wizard. The healing. Yeah, well, you know, yeah, you could have a healer. It's really nice to have a healer in the group, but with, you know, medicine 5,000 years in the future, you can simply buy stuff that'll take care of most of that. It's not a big deal. And so they're concerned, because my group, me and my kids, there's going to be a rat folk envoy who is basically going to be worthless in combat, and he's going to stay with the ship most of the time because it's his ship and he owns it. And his job really is to be more in the way than anything else. He is going to be a plot device for me to, he could be helpful sometimes, but most of the time he's just annoying because he's just kind of befuddled and he's not really as useful as you want him to be. And so in addition to the envoy, who is the kind of, he's like the bard helper class, except without all the magic, but his job is to give boosts to other people. And, this one's not really going to do any of that. And in fact, he's spending his first level ability, instead of spending it on something that would help boost other people around him, he's instead spending it on a power called Not in the Face, where essentially he makes himself look as pathetic as possible, and thus people choose not to hit him. So that it basically boosts his armor class for anyone that he's done his sniveling, pleading thing with. And that's really his only real power at this point. So, I mean, he'll have some knowledge, but otherwise, his main power is just to not get hit. So, he's going to be fun. But then the other three characters that my kids are playing, it's going to be 2 soldiers, 1 melee, 1 ranged, and a mechanic. And that's it. And I'm glad they have a mechanic, and I'm glad they have some combat. But there's not going to be an operative, so there's no thief rogue equivalent. There's no sneaky guy in there. There's not going to be any magic on the team at all. And so I asked on the subreddit about this, and basically everyone's opinion was, yeah, it's not that big a deal. No, they said, you don't need to fill in any of those gaps. Just play with what you've got. And trust me, tailor your adventures to suit their needs. And yeah, they're going to come across some magic stuff, and they're going to come across times when they wish they had a healer, and there's going to be some things that they're missing, but they'll find ways to compensate for that, because Starfinder allows them to compensate for that. And so, we've, in creating their characters, they all had specific concepts that they came up with on their own. And so I let them, come up with their stats and write down all the basics. And then the one thing I had them do as a group is to sit down with skills as a group, because there are not as many skills in Starfinder as there are in Pathfinder. And so the idea of, okay, here's the areas, here's how many skills you guys are going to get to choose from. Here's what your particular classes are good at and what options you have. And you can customize a little with themes, so it kind of boosts that. Are there areas you guys want to make sure someone gets covered? Does that fit into your character? Is that something you want to do? And so Kind of make sure they have most of the knowledge and skill-based stuff, mostly. They're still going to have some weak areas, but yeah, I think it's going to work out just fine. I don't think you actually have to have anyone in particular in your group. I think you can get by with what you've got because there's enough flexibility in them. This is one of the magic things about Starfinder is they went with the rogue concept from Pathfinder, the way you build a rogue in Pathfinder, and they applied that to every character class so that everyone has, instead of having, you know, all rangers get this power at this level, this power at this level, it's like as you progress, you know, each time you get a new ability, it's okay, now you get to pick from this range of abilities, and you get to pick the one that best suits your class. And so like picking feats, except, you know, you're picking more narrow abilities and powers, and they'll be more powerful than feats, but also you have some choice. So you can customize what kind of, you know, yes, you can be a rogue, an operative, but, you know, are you more of a scout who's doing, you know, searching and intel and tracking, or are you more of the cat burglar who's doing the climbing and breaking and entering and pickpocketing and whatever else? And so you have choices to make. And thus, yeah, I think they're going to be just fine. I don't think you actually need anybody in this game. And that's what they're telling me. And that's kind of the feel I'm getting. So I'm excited, but, you know, I'll tell you how it plays out. You know, we'll see how that goes. But I think it's going to be really good. All right. Next up is Kyle. Kyle says, Phoebe has inspired me to for another Starfinder question. When I heard people talking about Starfinder, I got super excited. Then I heard you and others talk about the details of it and the fact that there's a different role for everyone on the ship. Then I remembered why I don't like sci-fi games, the ship parts of the adventures. Can you run Starfinder on a world without a spaceship? I hate ship-based adventures, D&D or sci-fi. Yes, you can. You can. Look, it works from the premise that your group is going to be ship-based, but it is, I think, and I'll tell you more when I get Dead Sons and when I see the adventures played out, but I feel like it's more like Firefly, where it's not so much about the ship. Yes, you have, you know, occasional ship-based things. You know, occasionally you get into a scrape or you've got to do some negotiations with, you know, the wherever you're landing or whatever. But for the most part, the ship is just a tool that gets you from one place to another. And so you can have this episodic sort of thing where, okay, now we're on this planet and we're doing whatever we're going to do on this planet. And maybe that's part of it that doesn't appeal to you. I don't know. But yes, if you want to set up a game that is mostly planet-based and the players don't have to own their own ship or have access to their own ship, you want to play that out? Yes, there's all sorts of things that can be done that would accommodate that. And if you want to travel to another planet, okay, you're kind of going to need a ship, but, you know, you could always go hire some sort of high-level mystic who can do a teleport spell over that kind of distance, or by yourself teleportation over that distance. It's not, you know, it's not the kind of thing where you can haul goods that way or that you can make it a regular form of travel because of the cost, but it can be done, especially if you're not traveling that often. But yes, you absolutely can play Starfinder without a ship. But let me see how it plays out. You know, I'll tell you what we run into, and, you know, if you pick up Starfinder yourself, play around with it, see what happens for you. Let's see. Next is, oh, it's Willie Gilligan. That's awesome. Hey, Willie. Willie says, have you followed the trend in board games to use victory points at the end to figure out the winner? Yes. Yes. I have noticed that a lot. In fact, Kaz's game, Mars Needs Cows, uses victory points. Do you think not being sure who's winning until the end makes the game better? Or do you prefer clearly knowing who's in the lead during the game? I don't care one way or another. And in fact, most games that have victory points, I still think it's pretty clear who's winning most of the time anyway. You play Ticket to Ride, for example, and, you know, you've got your cards with your various missions on them. And yeah, most of those you wind up, you know who's in the lead anyway. You know, and in fact, a lot of them will have a track like Ticket to Ride or like Carcassonne. They have a track that lets you keep track of the score as you go. And yes, there will be some other conditions and things that you don't quite know what the exact victory point totals are, until you get to the very end. But again, in most cases, you know, but it does leave open that little bit of tension that, okay, clearly the two of us have been out in the lead the whole game. And now when we get down to adding it up, you know, are we super close? Did one of them pull out way ahead? Did we, you know, you don't know exactly. I like that. I like not having that certainty where it's obvious who's kicking whose butt all the way through the game. I think that's a little demoralizing. I don't mind victory points. I don't mind having the totals that you rack up at the end and go, oh, God, I didn't see that coming. I kind of like that because it's still, everybody feels like they're still in the game. Everyone still feels like they've got a chance. And I enjoy that personally. But maybe that's just me. Well, it can't be just me because they keep using it. So there's other people that appreciate it, apparently. All right, now it's Kaz. Kaz says, who is your first Starfinder character? My first Starfinder character is going to be a Vesk. And those are the, for those of you who aren't familiar with Starfinder yet, Vesk are the giant lizard guys from, they're essentially a Klingon analog. So they used to be at war with our world, and then some outside threat came along, and so now we've had to unify, and so the Vesk are now nominally our allies, but there's still a lot of mistrust. And so they are giant, warlike beings with a very rigid system of honor. And so I picked a Vesk, Solarian, and Solarian is kind of like Jedi Knight, if you want something familiar to equate it to. And I picked those two because those were the two least appealing options for me as I looked through. Vesk was the race I was least excited to play, and Solarian was the class I was least excited to play. And I thought, okay, but if I put them together, can I make something cool? And yeah, I can. And it'll be a Vesk with his celestial power will manifest as these huge dark claws over his real claws that he'll use to tear people apart, and then. His first revelation, or whatever their powers are called. His first power is going to be the black hole power, where when he gets completely attuned and he turns on his celestial power, it is going to just suck people towards him. So all enemies within 20 feet of him are just going to wind up sliding towards him, sliding into these huge claws that he's going to tear him up with. And I really like the image that portrays. I don't know if it's going to be effective in combat. No idea, but I'm really excited to try it out. So whoever gets a game put together, that's what I want. Vesk Solarian, I will play in it, and I will look badass. I don't know how effective it is, but I will be badass as all get out, and it'll be great. So Kaz then continues and says, should a Madison area nerd decide to send you canned goods for this holiday season, what flavor of canned goods would you prefer? Wow, most any fruit flavor is awesome. You know, or if you're getting more into candied stuff, I mean, you know, like caramel and butterscotch and peanut butter are always high on my list. But, you know, if we're talking about preserves and stuff, then, any fruit is good. My, Noah loves choke cherry. Oh my God, that's his absolute favorite. But anything is good. Anything. We don't care. God, that would be way too nice of you. And then his last one says, I want to do a group cosplay. Do you think people would recognize a paranoia troubleshooter team? Would they ever? Of course they would. You know why? You know why? All right. Oh my God, I still want to do this now. All right. Oh man, I'm so excited. I can't even form thoughts. Okay. If we all showed up for Gen Con and all we'd need, but everybody has red coveralls, so a red set of overalls, and then underneath that, a black t-shirt. That's your full uniform, and then we each will have a set, we'll have matching white patches that'll be sewn into the pocket of the coverall, and the patch will have your paranoia name on it, and we'll come up with all sorts of, and I say we all do red, personally, but you know, if someone wants to be team leader and they want to come in orange or yellow or green, I don't care, that's fine. But I think if we all show up in red, and then we all have very humorous paranoia names sewn in, and we can have varying numbers on them. So, you know, if you want to be Murd R Us 5, you can be that. Whatever. But we'll all have our paranoia names sewn in. And then whatever accoutrements you want to throw onto that, you know, if we want to have communicators or laser pistols on our hips, or, you know, maybe if we decide to do it, maybe one of us can get can find some cheap toy laser pistols, and then we can all have a matching set of laser pistols so the uniforms go together. That would be kind of cool. But then, you know, if you want to add on your experimental rocket boots, if you want to build a set of rocket boots and strap them on, that's fine. Oh, we'd also have to have black boots. Black boots, black t-shirt, red coveralls, name tags sewn into the coveralls. Perfect. Oh my God, this would work so well. Yeah, no, we're definitely doing that. This is our group cosplay for next year. If we have to beat and bully everybody else to get them on board with it, we will do that because we're going to make this happen. Oh, this would be so much fun. I really want to do a group of red level paranoia troubleshooters. I think that would be spectacular. All right, next up it says done. That was from me. All right, cool. Let's head on over to Facebook. And Facebook, oh, I got a bunch. This is great. Facebook is, first up is Nelly. Nelly says, whoa, 200 episodes, congratulations. Well, thank you, Nelly. I'm actually very happy with this. Nelly then has another post that says, I want to say thank you. Thank you for recording this podcast. Back when I lived in Ireland and I didn't have access to a gaming community, Animal Ball and Nerd Pride Radio was my way to get connected with the community and not feel isolated. This podcast really does mean a lot to me. Thank you. Oh my God. No, thank you. That is amazing. Yes, absolutely. Look, that's, I'm just doing this because I like hearing myself talk and I like connecting with people, and you guys are an awesome community. This is, yeah, absolutely. I don't have any more commentary. I'm just kind of speechless on that one. Next is from Pat. Pat says, congrats on the 200. To celebrate, what are your top 200 games of all time? Yeah, I only own like 80 games. I can't even, oh man. All right. Well, I suppose if I throw in all the role playing ones, I mean, I think I've played almost 200 games total in my life. So Kyle started a list of all the games he's ever played, and I started to pitch in with that one. So, I think, anyway, I get that you're joking. I'm not actually gonna do that. Okay. Next up, Kyle says, dude, did you read what Nelly said? Yeah, I just read it out loud, dude. He says, that makes me a bit weepy. Yeah, no kidding. I always thought we were just gassing around on the podcast, but people actually connected to it. I wonder what she thought about the chicks and gaming episode. The satire in that episode has not aged well. Oh, yeah, tell me about it. That was, and that's why I haven't re-released any of the old Animal Ball episodes. It's because, we were very crude and much less woke than we are now, you know, to get down with the modern vernacular, because I'm hip to the kids. I'm deaf and fly. But yeah, the humor in a lot of instances in Animal Ball does not hold up well, but I'm glad it's still connected with people. I'm glad it meant something. That is awesome. And then Iantha, who says, congrats on the 200th episode. Thank you. I appreciate you popping in. Sarah Beth says, congratulations, Mike. What would you advise young new podcasters do to achieve a similar success? Just record. Just record stuff. Find something that you really enjoy, a topic that excites you, and just record stuff. And specifically, look, I know I do the solo cast most of the time. I'm here and it's just my voice talking in the microphone. And I enjoy this because I'm full of myself, but if you've got someone that you connect with and you've got good chemistry with, I really recommend having two or three people together, because it's nice to have people to bounce stuff off of. It takes a lot of the pressure off when you're recording. And I think as much as I enjoy doing this, I also like having my kids on. I like when there's other people on the podcast, because again, oh man, it takes some of the pressure off of me. I find I can be funnier and more entertaining because, well, I've got time to think of stuff while they're talking, and that really helps out. But otherwise, just record. And then my biggest advice for someone is, once you've found your topic and you've started recording, make it as regular as possible. If you can release your recordings at the exact same time every week, or as close to the same time as you can, so people always know it's showing up on Saturday morning, or it's going to come out Friday night, or it's whatever it is, boy, that really helps out. You get a lot more return traffic when they know when to expect it. So do that, and have a place to actually build your community whether it's going to be your own forums and website, whether it's, you know, just through Twitter and Facebook, but some place where people can come and talk to you and share stuff and become a part of the thing you've created if that's what they feel like doing. So that's my own advice. But, you know, again, as awesome as this is and 200 episodes and I've got a bunch of really nice people listening, I'm not considering myself wildly successful at this point, and I feel kind of pretentious offering advice, but that's the advice I have. So there you go. And then, and then she finishes off with, "We love you, man. Thank you for all you do." Yeah, absolutely. I love being here every single week. This is fun. And then Kaz says, "Mike, tell us how grateful you are to have a community this wonderful." No kidding. You guys are there. This is how I get to play games. This is how I get to talk about stuff I love. I have an excuse to spend money on all the nerdy things that I want because, well, you know, hey, look, it's a community. It's part of what we do. It's a, oh man, yeah, I have to go. I have to go to Gen Con every year. We've got to connect, right? Yeah, see, this is awesome. And then Kaz says, "I'll say it as well. Without proud nerds and animal ballers, I would never have tried to publish anything." Dude, I am so proud of you. Seriously. You have, I've played Kaz's games and Kaz has good stuff, and I cannot wait to see what else you come up with, because you do good stuff. So, all right. Enough of this mushy stuff. We are getting to the end. I love you guys. Thank you. Thank you for being with me for 200 episodes, and we will keep this thing going. You guys are awesome. Say goodnight, Lisa.
Goodnight, Lisa.
Say goodnight, R2. I will see you guys next week. Bye.